streets don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your hosts, Floyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back.
Good evening, and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And our topic is, as always, The Streets Don't Love You Back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes. As we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. We have a great show for you tonight, so stay tuned in to the hottest radio show worldwide.
Hey, hey, ladies and gentlemen, and like my wife said, welcome to the hottest radio show worldwide. The streets definitely don't love you back. Today we got a great show with Miss Merlin, and before we bring Miss Merlin on to formally introduce herself, she requested that we play a commercial for her. So we're going to get into this commercial before we get into her interview. And here you go right here.
Freestyle. No one should be sentenced to 195 years in prison for money laundering. 195 years does not fix the crime or the problem. He has already been in prison for 20 years, and that's more than enough time to learn your lesson. Hashtag Free Salvador Magluta. Money laundering is a serious crime under federal law, a violation of 18U.S.C.1956, can result in a sentence of up to 20 years in prison, not 195 years. Free Sal. 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 Free Sal.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, we're going to bring Ms. Merlin on, and she's going to formally introduce herself.
Hello, everybody.
Oh,
hello,
Merlin,
Rob and Lucinda.
Hi, Merlin.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Welcome. Welcome
we're
to
doing
the show.
Great.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here. I'm here to tell my story in hopes that I can help others like Sal Magluta that have been unjustly sentenced. So what I'd like to say is, let's free Sal.
Absolutely.
All right.
So,
then.
Marilyn.
So we're going to...
Go ahead, babe.
So we're going to get right into it, Ms. Merlin, and we want to ask you, how did you get involved in the drug life with Sal?
That was, actually it was a favor how I got involved with Sal. I've known him since I was 15 years old, and it's been 40 years now that, you know, we're together on and off, you know, for reasons. But I just like to say that... if I tell you a little bit of my story, maybe you'll understand better.
Okay, go ahead, Ms. Merlin, and tell a little bit to the people. You have the floor.
Thank you. Thank you, Rob and Lucinda. I was born from Cuban parents. They came in to the United States, actually in New York City, in 1953. So I was born and raised in Manhattan. We were poor and we struggled. There were four kids, and dad and mom did all they could, you know, to raise us, but we were poor. At 15, when I was 15, my parents decided to move to Miami. when I was in Miami, I needed a job. I had no money, and my parents didn't have much either. So I went to work at a bakery, and then it was called Three Little Bakers. But at that time, you know, the first day I walked in to work, it was 6 o'clock in the morning. That's the time that the bread comes out. And I met Sal because it was his parents' bakery. And we've been ever since then together for 40 years, you know, on and off. On and off, I say, because, you know, he was like my first everything, my first boyfriend, my first everything. But I found out that he was dating other girls and that he came to me and told me this, that he had gotten a girl pregnant and he didn't want to get married and he didn't want to have kids. And I told him, do the right thing, you know, marry her and have your baby, but I will no longer be in the picture. So we remained in touch, you know, on and off. He would follow me to, like, the clubs and parties of the time, you know, just to talk and because he trusted me. I got married and divorced and had my son all in 9 months. And that took up, you know, a couple of years of my life without seeing Sal. And in 1982, Sal called me. And he said, do you remember the car you used to drive? And I said, yeah, the Dodge Challenger. It was blue. And Sal said, well, I'm going to pick you up. And I said, okay. And he says, watch to see what car I'm coming in, because it's not the Challenger. And I was living in a one room. The bathroom, kitchen, everything was in one room. And in that one room, I had the crib for my baby. And Sal picked me up, and we went to a fancy club, and they treated us like royalty. And that's when he said, you know, he sat me down and he said, you know, I'm selling cocaine. So we talked about it. And I told him, okay, you know, you've made like so many millions by now. I said, why don't you just get out before you're ahead, you know, while you're ahead. And he said, I can't do that because too many people depend on me. Which I don't know if that was true or an excuse just to stay in the business. So we dated on and off again, and I left Miami in 1984 to live in New York City with my son. And I had a job as a dental assistant, and I was doing well at the time. And then at that time, I got a call from my mom, and she said, I have a deaf brother, little brother, and he was in trouble. So I went back to Miami with my son. This was 1986 now. And my little brother committed a double homicide. And we didn't have any money to get an attorney. But mom had a friend that was a real estate attorney, which is not criminal, and we hired him. Of course, things didn't go well because he had no knowledge of criminal. So after a month of my little brother being in jail, he asked me, you know, to please, like, call Sal and tell Sal to get him out. And then he wrote down on a piece of paper, since he's deaf, he can't speak, he wrote down, if you don't call Sal, I'm going to kill myself. So I took that to heart. And what I did was I went to Sal's mother's house, and I asked her if she could get a contact with him, you know, so I could speak to him. And she took down my number, and that same night, you know, he called, and he said, what's wrong? And I told him, and he said, hang up. I'm going to, get an attorney to call you in like 5 minutes. Well, 5 minutes went by, and he called right away. So I explained the situation to him, and Sal hired like maybe 5-6 attorneys to get my brother, not necessarily out of jail, but away from the death penalty, because that's what he was facing. And now fast forward, me and Sal are, you know, together again, on and off, but mostly on at that time. And in 1991, Sal gets arrested. And he called me a week after his arrest, and he asked me if I would sign some paper saying that I was a paralegal so that I could go into the jail in and out and bring him out. They had him in the hole in SHU. They had him in the hole, him, Willie, and Benny. And I said, you know, okay, I'll do it. But when I said that, I realized that I was going to owe him forever because he did me a favor. And now I'm going to do him a payback is what I call it. And I couldn't say no. I was a teacher at the time, and I left teaching, and I signed the paralegal papers, and I was in the jail from 9 in the morning till 9 o'clock at night so that they could be in the visiting room and not inside the cell. So we ate out of those peanuts in the machine that they have in the visiting room, and we would spend all day there. Then one day, Sal asked me, he says, can you keep a ledger book for me? And I said, well, what do you need? He says, well, get some ledger paper, you know, and I want you to write down the different charities and churches and ministers that he had been sending money to. And he said he didn't want them to know that he was in jail because they might refuse the money. So I got the ledger book, and I wrote down all the names of all the ministers and all else, you know. But then ledger book kept growing, you know, to paying off guards, paying off lawyers, paying off witnesses, anybody who could be paid for, you know. I would start delivering the money for him and noting it in the ledger book. Now, what I did to protect myself was I coded the ledger book so that nobody could understand it but me, not even Sal. And I had that ledger book. It was a lot of people in there, let's just say. And I kept telling Sal to leave the business way before. I told him, you know, you're going to give up your freedom. You're going to get killed. You know, you're going to kill yourself. All for what? You know, for what? For trading in your freedom to a 6x6 cell, you know, where they tell you when to bathe, when to eat, when to exercise, when to the library, when to the phone, et cetera. And I knew Sal couldn't handle that type of life. I always said he was a free bird. And I told him, you know, again, through the years, you know, get out of business. It's not worth it. Because when they find you, they own you. And that's exactly what happened. Fast forward to 1996, I had the ledger book on me. Sal was out because of his first trial. He had bribed the jurors, and he got out for a couple of years before he went back in. But during that time, there was a false arrest on me because they had my phone wired, and they knew that I had the ledger book on me. So they pulled me over, and I saw one cop car, two, three, four, and then I said, something's wrong. You know, there's six cop cars behind me, you know, and I'm not doing anything. And it was pouring rain, so I wasn't speeding or doing anything. But they seized the ledger book, and when they seized it, I became a fugitive. I went to live in the mountains, in the Adirondack Mountains in New York. I lived there for a couple of years, and then 1998, the FBI finally found me and arrested me and said that I was facing 205 years. So I had decided before they even came, because those 2 years in the mountains alone with my two dogs made me think, when they come for me, what am I going to do? And I decided that I was going to cooperate. It was just a matter of time before they came. And they arrested me, and I spent a year with the FBI in a safe house being debriefed mostly because the ledger book was coded. Even though they had the ledger book, they couldn't tell what was in it. So after being debriefed, you know, all that time and testifying, I went into witness protection program for 5 years, which was not fun. You have no friends, no family. You're moving all around the United States. You have different IDs, different names, different everything. And it was hard. It was really difficult. But I had to do it because my mom, my dad, and my son, which is the world to me, they were being charged with money laundering. And they had come from Cuba, and they had jobs that were illegal. They never did, like, a bad thing in their life. And I was not going to let my mom, my dad, and my son go to jail for something I had done. So after testifying, I was sentenced to 3 years probation. Now, what some of us don't realize is that your actions not only affect you. If they only affected you, well, oh well. But it affects your family, your mom, your dad, your sisters, brothers, sons, daughters, wives. They all suffer the consequences of your actions. So your choice, which, you know, will hurt them. And to tell you the truth, all you really have is family. The streets don't love you back, but your family will love you back. Something to think about. And I'm going to use Sal as an example here as to what I want to say. Sal had a beautiful family. He was not poor. You know, the family owned a couple of bakeries, you know, and he decided to trade his family in for 12 years of money, drugs, women, fame, glamour. So now he is serving an unjust sentence of 205 years. I think he's at 194 now. He's in Supermax. That's 23 hours in the cell and 1 hour out. He's been there for 10 years. And that's abusive because the prison system is supposed to work to rehabilitate you, not to punish you. And he's been extremely abused. He has dementia. He's losing his teeth. He has ulcers. He has kidney problems and more things that go on and on with his physical, you know, health. So he traded millions in for a 6x6 prison cell. Now, ask yourself, is it worth it? It may be something to think about. And when they say, yeah, those 12 years, it was like everybody thought it was easy money. Easy money is not easy. You have to watch your back. You have to hide from the feds and the rest of the government. You could get killed. You can get your merchandise ripped off. You can go to prison, and then they own you. Or you could commit suicide like Aaron Hernandez, the football player, did. He'd rather die than do time. So those are your choices. And they have huge consequences. And I'm here to say you don't need to go to college. You can learn a trade. You can be a manager. you know, for I was a manager at Home Depot. I mean, you can do something that is not illegal, because once they get you, you're done. You're done. I met a young man when I was in prison. I'll call him Tanky. He was 20 years old. He had 6 kids, and he got caught with a tiny bit of crack. Well, they gave him life. And between me and Sal, we paid for an attorney for him. Well, Sal's money, but my actions, to see if they could get him out. And couldn't do it. And I couldn't believe that they could do things like that, like give you a sentence which doesn't match the crime. And just because you do a bad thing doesn't make you a bad person. I mean, Tanky, again, I'm going to refer to him. He was a wonderful father, you know, a wonderful son. I met his mother, and he decided to take that road, and he's still in prison. So to recoup everything, get back on, what I would say is, if you do something and you know it's the wrong thing to do, you got to stop, recoup, and get back on track. Believe me, I'm no angel. I've had my share of mistakes and things that my action caused a lot of bad consequences. So I'm not talking off the top of my head. I've actually, like, been through it. Maybe I didn't do time in jail, but I lived like I was in jail, you know, moving from place to place and different names. I still to this day feel like a prisoner. And remember, the streets don't love you back, but your family loves you back. And I like to say some words to Sal if he's listening or he gets to listen, which I don't think can happen, but I want to tell him to keep the faith. He's a very faithful person. And I want him to keep hope. I'm sorry, that was thunder here in Florida. Sorry. And I felt like it hit my head. Uh-uh. But anyway, your family is fighting really, really hard for, you know, your release, meaning Stella Gluta's release. They're doing everything they can, you know, to get him out and free Sal. Let's free Sal. Help is on the way. I missed him reading the Bible to me. I missed his calls and his email. I'm sorry, Rachel, what they're doing to him. And I still love you. And I guess I always will. And let's freestyle. And to wrap it up, I'm here today to educate our youth and adults not to take the path that Sal took. Because Sal and many others, including me, because it's not worth it. In the end, the streets don't love you back. And I'd like to say to Rob and Lucinda that thank you for having me. It's been an honor to share my story in hopes that I can educate and at least advise our youth and adults not to take the path that Sal and many others have taken. And about the streets don't love you back, the work they do is humbling to me and remarkable. So let's freestyle.
All right. I just want to kind of go back a little bit to let everybody know exactly who Sal and Willie were. For those of you that don't or haven't seen it yet, you might want to go and watch the Cocaine Cowboys, Kings of Miami. That's where you'll also see Maryland.
Right.
It's their story. Two Cuban teenagers who just wanted more out of life. They had the opportunity from somebody else that they knew to get into this business. And I think you met them before they were even into that life. So you guys were all still teenagers. But they decided to go down that road, and they ended up to be the kingpins of Miami and a lot of other places.
Yeah, exactly. So, the kingpins of Miami, but everybody knows, you know, they worked that in New York, you know, in Colombia and California, and they were the kings of Miami at that time. The Griselda Blanco times had passed, where she was just killing people off. Willie and Sal Magluta were not like that. They were nonviolent. What they did was, yes, that they stole cocaine, and yes, they did money laundering, but they were nonviolent, and it was like a fresh air, you know. It's just fresh air not to have Griselda Blanco around killing people.
Yeah. What makes me mad is that he money laundered and paid off people to the highest levels in the government. Now, where are those people, and why aren't they behind jail for accepting that money and being part of this?
Everybody that I know from way back, either they pled out, did their time and their home, or they passed away in prison. But everybody in our group, you know, the organization, they already did their time and their home with their families.
But as far as the law enforcement and those kind of people, did they even get in trouble?
Did who get in trouble?
The law enforcement, you know, the police officers and all the
right.
other corrupt people that were involved.
Right. They did their time. I have a bunch of attorneys in my ledger book that did time.
Okay.
There's guards that did time. Everybody, you know, did their time and was released. Now, Sal, they sentenced him for 205 years just for money laundering, really. And that doesn't fit the crime. You know, 205 years, that means you're going to die in jail.
Yeah, same as
because
the
everybody
marijuana
everybody,
offenses that people are in there forever for. It's
the
ridiculous.
People are in there. No, there's nobody in there. Everybody's out. I checked with everything. Everybody is out except Sal.
Wow.
He's the only one that's still in. It was 205. I think he's at 194 now. And they're abusing him because they can.
Yeah.
And they do.
Well, they put him in the toughest prison, too. He was, if he wasn't violent, that's for, like, the most violent offenders in the world up in Florence, Colorado.
Of course, but he was in Indiana before that, and we were talking, and he was emailing me at the same time, and he would call me every day. And it just, it's sad to say this, but he brought in a cell phone into the prison. He had it brought in, and they found a cell phone. And that landed him back in Supermax. So he's been in Supermax now for 10 years, which is unimaginable. And his health is fading. It goes with the territory of being locked up 10 years, not talking to anybody. They say they're throwing out his mail. You know, it's just really abuse of what is going on.
Yeah, I can't imagine being in a little cell like that and not being able to speak to anybody or see anybody or, you know, I mean, it's just, it's hard time. It's
it
long,
is.
Really. Anything over, they say, 10 days is in solitary confinement is inhumane.
So you can imagine 10 years. And
okay.
And he's been in for 25 now. 10 in Supermax, but he did those 5 years where I was visiting him to pull him out. He was in special housing unit in the hole. He was
mm-hmm.
there for 5 years, but he wasn't really in the cell because I would pull him out every day. So they got to go to the visiting room and not be in the cell. Had that not happened, he would have been in the hole 5 years. So 10, you know, in Supermax, and then another 5, you know, in the hole, it's punishment. And it's not supposed to be punishment. Prison was designed to rehabilitate, not to punish.
Right.
And that's where we are now.
Yeah.
So let's
have
reach out.
Absolutely. We'll do what we can to help spread that message. I have a question. For a period of time, you were going through depression and various things. When did most of that occur? At what point? And was it because you felt in that life you couldn't do certain things? Or was it after all of this happened? Or kind of what led into all that depression?
No, my depression started when I was only 7 years old. I don't like to repeat this, but I want people to understand. My older brother molested and raped me when I was 7 to I was 12. And after that, I fell into a huge depression, which I still fight nowadays.
I get it. I understand, because I was sexually abused as a young girl, and it has a lot to do with the way you live your life after that. And as a teenager, I turned to alcohol and did, you know, a lot of other things I shouldn't do. But, you know, I was always looking for a way out, and I get it. I totally get it.
Right. So
that's another part of our message. Is for those mm-hmm. kids that have gone through something like that to reach out to somebody. Back when we were young like that, you didn't tell anybody anything.
No, I didn't tell anybody.
It wasn't talked about.
I told my mom when I was 40 years old.
See? How many years is that? 30? You know?
Yeah.
we didn't talk about things like that when we were little. You just didn't. And it's unfortunate.
No. It is. That's one of my missions, too, is to educate girls and boys who have gone through something like that. It's not just girls. It's boys, too. I had a friend who committed suicide recently because he couldn't handle being raped as a child.
Right.
By a priest, nonetheless.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And he
That's
just so, put
you know,
the gun.
Mm.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to say that, you know, when these young kids are acting out, there's a lot of other underlying things going on that, you know, the parents just don't talk about or don't ask questions or don't want to know the truth. But when kids are really acting out doing things, there's a reason behind it, whether you want to believe it or not.
Right. Yeah, I remember when I first told my mom, and I was like 40 by then, and the first thing she said to me was, never let your dad know, because my dad was like a straight arrow. And that
mm-hmm.
kind of like hurt my feelings, because I expected something like, oh, I'm so sorry, you know, where was I, why didn't I see it, you
right.
know, but I didn't get that kind of sympathy. I mean, the first thing she said was, don't let dad ever find out. And that hurt me. It did.
Yeah,
it hurt my feelings.
That's a tough one. And did she do it to protect your brother again? Because maybe, would your dad have killed him? Would your dad have done something? Or would he have just been so hurt?
He would have been hurt. like I said, Dad was a straight arrow. Never smoked, never did any drugs, never drank. The only thing he looked forward to is when I went to Jamaica all the time, I would bring him back some Cuban cigars, and he would so enjoy it. But that's like the worst thing Dad ever did. All Dad did was work.
Yeah. So, Rob, do you have any questions?
Yeah, I have one last question for you, Ms. Marlin. If you had to do this all over again, what would you have done different?
Wow, there's a list. No, really, there is a list. I don't really have an answer for you, because it would be, I should have told my mom when I was 7, or I should have told Sal, no, you know, I don't want to be a paralegal, a wannabe or whatever, paralegal. I want to keep teaching. I would have maybe put my little brother in some type of, like, psychiatric care. You know, there's so many what ifs. But it is what it is, and I dealt with it as it came.
That sounds like a winner. And one last question for you right here. Any last words you would like to share with the viewers?
Oh, I like to at least they hear what I'm saying. And if I can change one life, that's good enough for me. Of course, it'd be better, you know, if it was a lot of people, but I know the streets too. And they'll say something like, well, no, the money, you know, we were poor. No, you know, think of your actions is what I would say. This action is going to lead to make a list and see where it lands you. And I'm sure that it will land you with your family being the street and not the streets don't love you back. Because they don't. They don't. They use you and they throw you out. And they spit you out, I should say. And they're not your friends.
That's definitely the truth.
Yeah, they're not your friends.
Anything else you'd like to ask, Ms. Marlin?
Rob?
Yeah. Anything else you'd like to ask, Ms. Marlin?
No, I just really like to thank you and Lucinda for doing, like, the work you do. You know, I think it's just awesome. And I hope you continue to do it. And I hope that I can contribute to your organization, which is, you know, a nonprofit organization, and you offer so much help to those that need it and want it. Knowing that you're out there makes me feel good.
We definitely appreciate that, Ms. Marlin. And I'm going to go ahead and close out, and we're going to hit that freestyle one more time before we close the show out, and we'll be right back with Ms. Marlin to say her very last words. But here we go one more time. We're going freestyle.
Freestyle, 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 freestyle. No one should be sentenced to 195 years in prison for money laundering. 195 years does not fix the crime or the problem. He has already been in prison for 20 years, and that's more than enough time to learn your lesson. Hashtag Free Salvador Magluta. Money laundering is a serious crime under federal law. A violation of 18U.S.C.1956 can result in a sentence of up to 20 years in prison, not 195 years. Free foul. 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 Free foul.
All right, let's work on
well said.
Injust. Yes. You know, and that's why we do what we do with our prison reform and our Streets Don't Love You Back life skills intervention program. You know, we have our life skills sent into prisons all over the country. And if it's just to educate them a little bit on learning how to make better choices, and you know, most people are coming home. So what can they learn to do better once they get out? You know, we believe in second chances, and, you know, people make mistakes, and, you know, how can we help different choices, you know, once they're home? And then do we have the resources? Because, you know, if they come out of jail and they don't have somewhere to go, somewhere to work, somewhere to make money, they're going to turn back to what they do know, which is the wrong things. And so, you know, we just have to keep educating, keep fighting for justice, and then get the resources to the right places, you know, to the people that need to know where do I go to get help once I'm out. So,
well, I know you and Rob are doing your best to accomplish that.
Well, we're just like you. If we can help one person, you know, and the reason we do what we do is from our past life and bad choices too, you know. We learn a lot of things. I think that's how most people learn and change, because they, you know, they've made mistakes. So there's nobody perfect, and we all make mistakes, and we just have to now choose to do different. To make the right decisions and the right choices, and continue to just to help people.
That's when the Streets Don't Love You Back come in.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm so proud of you and Rob doing this. I don't know if I could have put this whole thing together. You know.
We're grateful that you, you know, came to our show to share your life and your story, and we'll definitely help push your message out there. And once this show is done, there's a link that can be shared to any social media, so we can keep, you know, sharing your message, sharing that the Streets Don't Love You Back, and Free Sal and everyone else that's unjustly incarcerated. It's, you know, the rules and the laws need to be changed.
Exactly. Exactly. Those would be my last words.
Yeah, Rob, are you there? I think you're muted.
That sounds like a winner. I'm right here on deck. And once again, it was an honor to have you on the show, Ms. Merlin. And thank you for, you know, being a part of the Streets Don't Love You Back organization now, educating others against that lifestyle. So we want to thank you once again for that. And we'll send the link to you once the podcast is over with. You can re-listen to it, and you can share it any way you would like to share it around the world. And once again, thank you.
Thank you also. This means a lot to me.
You got it. Anything you need, let us know. If we can help, we will.
The Streets Don't Love You Back.
Sounds like a winner. God bless. Take care.
I really wanted that to be my last word because
all
it's
right.
So true. So true. Okay.
True.
Much love.
Okay. Thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Talk soon. Goodbye.
Have a great night. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
You're welcome.